Hi, Dan.
Why, hello, Jason.
Oh, my goodness. Did you get a good night's sleep or something?
I wish.
Oh, no. Well, you know about it because you made shortcuts to track your sleep.
I did make shortcuts to track my sleep. I thought it would be interesting. I was trying to find an easy way to do this that didn't involve, you know, having a spreadsheet that I made myself.
Uh-huh.
And I've used the that bedtime feature, which I think is only as of iOS 12, 11?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't remember. It's fairly recent. But I got kind of frustrated with it because it's very prescriptive. Like, you must go to bed now. And I was like, but I'm not ready to go to bed. No, you must go to bed and you must get up at the same time every day. And I was like, that seems inflexible to me. I don't like that. Maybe there's a better way.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
It had occurred to me at some point, like, oh, you know, really, iOS should be smart enough to realize that, like, when I turn my lights off, I'm going to bed. And when I pick up my phone in the morning, because I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep, and I'll put on some music or podcast, radio drama, something in the background. But rarely, you know, I'm not like flipping through Twitter in the middle of the night. So I feel like it should be smart enough to realize, like, oh, now you've picked up your phone and is the morning. It seems like you're awake. We can figure out how much sleep you got, or at least provide some facility for doing that. But it doesn't. So I made two shortcuts, one of which just records the time in a text file and turns my light off. And the second one reads... That was... there was some shrieking.
This is what the people pay for.
Secret podcast.
I think my daughter just got into her top college, and I can report this live now on this silly podcast.
That is exciting. That's way more exciting than a sleep tracking.
I just got accepted into the University of Oregon.
Woo! Congratulations, Jamie.
Dan says congratulations. Yeah, that was what the whooping was. So that's great. This is why people pay money.
That was a nice, you know what? It's nice that it was pleasant news.
That's why
and
I leave
like,
the door
oh, no,
open.
There's been a disaster.
I was like, why is Dan's fiance shouting in the background there? No, it's in my house. She's not here.
She's not here.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's exciting.
Later they're screaming.
You know, I bought a Bedit, which is
I had thought about doing that.
The weird sleep tracker that is owned by Apple, which people don't know about. That is a little like flat strip thing that you put under your sheets.
Right, right. Yeah.
And plug it in. And it's got like at the end of its cord is like a little Bluetooth thing that's part of the cord. And the problem I have with it, actually, I'm going to write it up at some point, is it assumes you use your iPhone and that you sleep with your iPhone next to your bed. And I don't sleep with my iPhone next to my bed. It's out in the kitchen. I have my iPad next to my bed, and so I paired it with my iPad. And the problem there is that my iPad, first off, is an iPad, and the app only is an iPhone app. That's bad. And second, you know, the iPad doesn't have the connection to all the health data that my iPhone does.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of dumb because, like, they should sync, and it shouldn't be an issue, and that app should work on the iPad. Because I don't leave my phone on my nightstand. I put it somewhere else. The iPad comes back and is on the nightstand. And this is important, too, because one of the things it does is it actually flips on the microphone while you're sleeping and detects your snoring and logs it, which is actually, as a sometimes snorer, is actually a pretty cool feature. And I've enjoyed it, but it does feel like all the stuff I just discussed is part of the issue.
I'm curious because it's Bluetooth is the issue, right?
It's Bluetooth. Yeah. So it has to be the device. Well, plus it's using the microphone, but it also is talking via Bluetooth. So you really need to have a device in your
room. Right.
And it's even trickier than that because if you force quit that app, so it's just completely closed, it won't log because it has to do the thing with the Bluetooth connection and also like is listening, wants to listen to your snoring. So it's a work in progress. It's interesting that they bought it.
And I
like the idea because I don't want to log. I'm not gonna, you know, no offense to your shortcuts, but I don't want to log it. And I think you're right, like there should be other behavioral cues about this, like the evil without putting a thing on your mattress, you should be able to maybe say, when I turn this light out, start logging here. It wouldn't be perfect, because like with the bed, it is actually noticing like when I'm in bed and then when I'm asleep, and it can tell like what my breathing is and what my heartbeat is.
This can't do that, obviously.
while I'm asleep, different from like when I turn to go to sleep. And also likewise in the middle of the night, if I wake up and I'm awake for a half an hour, or I get out of bed and get a glass of water and then come back to bed and all that, the Bedit thing logs it all.
Right. I mean, and I've seen people, you know, there are third-party sleep apps, both for the iPhone and for the Apple Watch, that, you know, do a lot of more advanced tracking stuff.
Right, David Smith has Sleep Plus.
But I don't want to wear a watch while I'm sleeping.
Yeah, I know.
That's the thing.
It works really well.
That's great.
But you have to wear your watch while you're asleep and then charge it when you take a shower, basically.
Yeah, the charging thing is not even my biggest problem. I find it uncomfortable. Like, I just don't want to wear a watch while I'm sleeping. And that's, you know, not everyone wants to, right? In the same way that not everybody keeps their iPhone on their bedstand, right? Like, you know, we're all different people. We have different behaviors. And, you know, there should be some adaptation. But I think it is interesting, you're right, that Apple bought that company and hasn't done anything yet, but I would be shocked if there were not some sort of more integrated sleep tracking down the road.
Yeah,
they don't buy those things
on
whims.
Like you could keep wearing your watch, but to have these things all interconnected, and like, could you have it be that the Bedit just talks to an Apple Watch instead, or something like that while it's charging, that you could do this in some different ways to sync the data around. I wrote a piece on Macworld this week where I basically I have kind of turned around my feelings about you and I talked a while ago about like Apple getting out of the airport business, and like at the time I think what I said was I understand why they don't want to focus on it. Other companies are doing it. I've turned around on that. Not that I don't still feel like they don't want to focus on it. What's turned me around, and it's basically Amazon buying Eero, is I think Apple internally is not wrong in saying we would rather focus on other things. I think the problem is that all of these tech companies that are little startups that are building interesting infrastructure things, especially for homes, are being bought by their competitors. And the problem. The problem is not like Apple needs to make an Eero. The problem is that if Eero is owned by Amazon and then Google has Google Wi-Fi, like, you're running out of Wi-Fi infrastructures for people's homes, including all of their smart and connected devices in their homes that aren't in the hands of an Apple competitor, which means, one, depending on their data practices, it doesn't matter. Apple's commitment to privacy doesn't matter, because all their data then immediately goes to Amazon and Google, and then goes to their cellular or cable provider after that. Like, that's bad. But also it means that those devices are all going to be prioritized for the Internet of Things format of choice, for the platform of choice of Apple's competitors. And Apple might, I don't mean like they're going to say we're not compatible with Apple stuff. Apple, especially in the US, is so successful that's never going to happen, but it doesn't have to. It can just not be a priority. And so I'm turned around on this now, where I feel like Apple just needs to buy some stuff. And I'd be fine if Apple literally bought some stuff and kept it at arm's length. Like, I think, you know, Eero would be a good example, where if Apple had bought Eero instead of Amazon, would they needed to have turned that into an Apple product, or could they have literally been like, just keep doing your business and don't be bad?
Eero were former Apple people too.
They were.
So
you left. But that's the thing. So like, I start to think like, who owns Netgear? Could Apple just buy Netgear? Because they've got so much
business in there that they don't want.
I know that's the thing, right? But it is kind of, if I was Apple. I mean, here's the argument. If I was Apple and I had all this cash and I was concerned about our, you know, competitors buying up stuff, you could literally just build an Apple owned holding company and just strategically purchase companies that you think are valuable to be operated independently. and do it that way if you didn't want to integrate it into your operations. But I get the feeling like the room is getting a little crowded. The oxygen's getting a little thin in here in terms of a lot of this tech stuff. And really it was like, okay, Apple, you have a commitment to privacy, but then the very next thing that happens is that all of your phones are connected to a router owned by Amazon or Google.
They could buy like Ubiquiti or something like that.
They want to be in the high-end networking business?
The enterprise business.
Or they could build their own. I mean, you know,
sure,
they could do that too.
Done it before.
But I feel like Apple needs to be more present in that market in ways that they haven't been. And that includes also the other part of that Macworld article, which is which I mentioned on Upgrade, I think, this week. It's not a brilliant idea, but I feel like putting the HomePod and the Apple TV together and making a soundbar that is, basically that's what it is. It's Siri controlled. You can play music on it. You can attach it to your TV and it'll sound great. It's got a bunch of different tuned speakers and algorithms to make it seem like surround sound. And it also has, you connect it to your TV, so it'll also drive your TV. Like, I feel like that's a product that, honestly, that is so high priced. There's so many high priced like premium soundbars now that Apple's pricing scheme would not be unreasonable for it. They could actually sell some, and it's just it's existing technology. But it went from there. Originally, that was what the article was going to be, and it went from there to really like, now there are places where they need to play in this market. I mentioned Ecobee too, which is a company that actually Amazon has invested somewhat in. That's a Canadian company that makes a smart thermostat that is very much. It's got round rects. I mean, it is a round rect. It is so Apple inspired in so many ways. The actual controller is like an iPhone app, like on the wall. It is, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, Google owns Nest. Does Apple need a smart thermostat? Well, no, but maybe Apple needs that smart thermostat to not be bought by a competitor.
Well, and I think there is an angle to it as well that's about, Apple's promulgated HomeKit out there, and it itself does not really make HomeKit devices. Yeah,
right.
I mean, it has a hub, it has the HomePod, but it doesn't really, like, in some ways, there's like a lead by example angle where it's like, you know what, if you're Apple and you're pushing out like, hey, this is, let's see all the cool things you can do with HomeKit, you kind of need to be eating your own dog food in there, and like, perhaps evincing some way of like, oh, this is like best, but this is how we're doing this, or this is an example of all the things you can do with it. I feel like that wouldn't hurt, and certainly they also have I'm fascinated by this whole idea of them reviving product lines and businesses that they've done away with. I mean, because we saw Ming-Chi Kuo's report this week, which included like, oh yeah, they're going to release like a new like 6K display, external display or something like that. I was like, oh, I thought we were out of the display game years ago. I mean, maybe they will, maybe they won't, but like.
No, they've said
I'm
they fascinated. Would. They've said they would. They backtracked on that. They said originally when I think the iMac Pro was announced, they said they were out of the display business, or maybe the 5K iMac, and then they have backtracked that they're going to do it. But
oh, okay,
but,
I didn't
but
realize
I,
that.
I think you're right. There's nothing wrong with changing your view when the truth on the ground changes. That's basically what I'm saying. Is like, as I look at this, I'm like, I think Apple needs to play some defense here. Not that they would do it because it's like, no, what we really want to do is make wireless routers, but more like we really don't want all the wireless routers to be made by companies that are invested in mining user data, right? Like,
well, there's a soup to nuts approach in there too, which is also something that is very traditionally Apple. And even if it isn't a priority for them or a defensive priority, like there is an angle to, both the defensive and, as you're saying, like the offense for the defense, because we can make a product that we think is going to protect, not only not sell your privacy, private information, but actively work towards protecting your private information.
Well, that was something I mentioned is like, and people have suggested this to me in the past. I've been like, nah, they're not going to do it. That seems like too far. But it's like, I don't know, if you're going to double down on privacy and you're worried about privacy in people's homes. Yeah, maybe part of some Apple subscription service should be a VPN, like and that is super integrated into devices. And if they do make a Wi-Fi thing, integrated in there too, and route that traffic. Because imagine how frustrated they would make everybody else who is selling every cell phone company and every cable company that is monitoring the traffic on their networks if all the Apple devices basically locked it all out and tunneled it out. And I realize that would be a huge infrastructure challenge for them, but at the same time, Apple has a lot of money, they have a lot of infrastructure, and they're motivated to make this point about privacy and security, and it would be a service that they would charge for, and they really like that too. So I'm starting to come around on that too. Imagine imagine an Apple-owned router that includes, you know, guaranteed privacy, basically. That's there's something to be said for that. And then you think about the constellation of devices. One of the things I mentioned in my macro piece is, I know it's dumb, but like Amazon now makes a super easy to set up smart switch. And the fact is, as dumb as smart switches are, they are the base. They are the base of all smart home installations, because we all have devices that aren't smart, and all mm-hmm. you need to do is plug in one of these things that lets you turn it on and off. And I have like 8 of them, and they're not that interesting, but like Apple could make one, they could mark it up, they could sell it at the Apple store and make a tidy profit on it, and it could be super easy to set up. Amazon makes one too, and it would be like the ultimate HomeKit switch. Like, I know it's never going to be a product that makes them a huge amount of money, but it could be profitable, and it could grease the skids for HomeKit. Yeah,
gets your foot in the door.
And make it easy for Apple to have a thing of, like, again, you've got the Apple retail store. There is something to be said for selling. Not only are you buying a new iPhone or a new Mac, but you're also going to buy our router, and you're going to buy our smart plugs, and you're going to buy our thermostat. And like, if Apple is an ecosystem company, and it is, and it wants to get more money out of the people who are in its ecosystem via services, and it does, I start to look at the smart home thing and think, you gotta be way more aggressive here. And they did make a hire, right? There's a new guy in charge of it that they just hired, and that was the kind of news peg of that story, is like, what has he been brought in to do? Has he been brought in to tinker around the margins of the HomePod, or has he been brought in to really go into this business? Because I know it's not as sexy as entertainment, like video streaming services and all of that, but I feel like Apple could really like put their foot on the gas in terms of this and say, Apple's ease of use, Apple's commitment to security and privacy, you know, you come into our stores, we can outfit the stuff for your house, like go to town on it, rather than being what they have been up to now, which is sort of like, yeah, well, here's, we sell these guys as, you know, switch, and there's this thing over here, this thermostat that we sell, and you know, good luck. And like, maybe this fits too well in their strategy now for them to avoid. I don't know.
Yeah. Plus all the routers are terrible. I was just looking at the best Wi-Fi router on the Wirecutter. If you look at them, they're all ugly, which I know is not necessarily a thing that people care about.
Oh,
but
they're
like,
so ugly. They're so bad. They're designed.
So ugly.
Well, that's the difference between the mesh
router. They look like they're for gamers.
The mesh routers and the standalone routers. The difference is amazing, because mm-hmm. so many of the standalone routers are like, they've got
really
three
nice.
Masts and stuff, and they're super ugly. And the mesh ones are like little boxes that are pretty,
they look like Apple designed
even
them,
the
right?
I mean, the Eero ones look exactly like Apple designed them. The Netgear one looks a little bit different, but it is also like, this is a consumer friendly device, and you pay a little bit more, but you get this easy setup, and like, that's what you want. That's exactly what people want if they're going to go beyond their, you know, what their cable company provides. And that's and that's where the angle is really strong, is if all you want is like Wi-Fi around your cable modem, you don't need to buy some other stuff. But there is an opportunity if you've got all the other stuff, if you've got the smart home stuff, or you've got a home where it doesn't fit. Like, once you get past that threshold where it's like, oh, you know, yeah, but now I've got this doorbell and I've got this camera in the backyard and all this stuff, like, oh, I need a mesh network. Yes. And now there's the opportunity for somebody to come in. And I just feel like Apple could, there's a story for Apple to tell there. And, you know, So I don't know whether they will choose to do that or not, but I feel like the reason to do it is not, oh, wouldn't it be cool? The reason to do it is all your competitors are doing this. If you sit by the wayside, you won't be able to avoid having your competitors place themselves between you, your devices and the internet.
The real reason to do this is that I'm going to need to replace my AirPort Extreme eventually. That's the issue.
Spite and taking care of Dan are the real.
Thank you.
Real reasons. So I have Eero's here, and they have been a sponsor on podcasts, and these are ones they sent me because they wanted me to talk about it. But I would not endorse. I'll read their ad copy, but they really legitimately have. I mean, there are products I get for podcasts, and then I put them away. But these are still my Wi-Fi because they work really well. And my understanding is the Netgear Orbi are quite similar. Like, it's a good category. They're pricey, but like, they really do work. they have solved, these companies have solved a lot of those configuration issues. The idea that, you know, that they're, instead of like giving you multiple standalone routers and having them talk to each other, they have like a base, and then they have little beacons or whatever that you plug in other places. And it works great.
That was the number one thing I always end up troubleshooting. I used to always end up troubleshooting for friends, was I can't get my internet signal over here. And it was like, all right, there are things you can do, but almost all of them are a pain in the ass because they all involve either getting range extenders, which are almost universally crappy, or setting up a second router. Not all routers supported like a really nice bridge mode, so then you'd end up with people with like multiple networks. And even if they did support a nice bridge mode, configuring that was generally really annoying. And even on the airport, it was like, you had to do some sneaky things to kind of figure out how to make that work.
Yeah, and everybody had their own relay system. Like, it wasn't in the standard. And still, I don't know if it is now, but like, for, I remember that, like, you could have two routers with the same SSID, but if they weren't made by the same company, everything would be just a disaster. You needed to have them be the same, and they're using the same protocol on the back end to talk, like, over the backhaul or whatever, to talk amongst themselves. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. And that's still true with the mesh networks. Like, they're using their own proprietary system, but it's all, like, designed to do that now, and in a way that it wasn't in the earlier days. So, I don't know. It's a... Anyway, that was my thing. I turns out that I felt more passionate about it than I thought I would, from the sense that like I feel like it's slipping away from them a little bit, and they need to be more aggressive. And maybe they are. Maybe you know, what we've seen with some of these purchases is a sign that they're going to be a little more aggressive about it, because I do think that they're, you know, this is all connected, and there might even be a subscription revenue option here, and it fits in with their whole privacy story. So we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Well, I mean, and you can buy all those things with your new Goldman Sachs Apple credit card.
Oh boy, that was a really lousy story, because it's like, oh, this will solve a lot of these things. It's like, well, I don't know about that, but I can see Apple rolling iOS features in that are only for their credit card, which is super jerky, but I can totally see it.
Yeah, I'm curious to know exactly. This strikes me as one of those stories that has an angle on it that may not. Almost certainly won't be the same story that Apple tells, obviously, but it will. I'm curious to see how much it actually lines up. I kind of use this as a jumping off point this week in my Macworld article to talk a little bit about Apple Pay and where I think there's still room to improve Apple Pay, because I think it's pretty good. And obviously there's some stuff that's not entirely under Apple's control, like adoption, right? Like, you know, they've got some more big places signed on, including Target, 7-Eleven, all that jazz, but there are still major retailers that kind of want to do their own thing, right? Like, and are protective about their customers' data and don't want to have Apple coming in and basically stopping them from doing that. And there's only so much that Apple can do about that. But I think there are some like implementation details in Apple Pay that interest me in terms of getting it to be an even better system than it already is. And so one of those, for example, like a lot of the stuff is in like the pay person-to-person payment. Like I like Apple Pay Cash. I've used it. I've run into some problems with it every once in a while where it turned out like somebody I was trying to exchange money with didn't have a debit card linked. And it gave some problems, even though you are supposed to be able to use it with a credit card. But it's like, you know, building on top of iMessage was a good choice in terms of rolling it out because it's easy. But that said, I have definitely run into situations where I wanted to send money to somebody that wasn't in my contacts. And you can obviously go through and like get their phone number and put into contacts just so you can send them like, you know, $20 or whatever. But based, you know, a little bit like what we were talking about last week or 2 weeks ago with airdropping files across a network, is like, oh, this is another place potentially you could expand AirDrop, right? Like, right. What if you could AirDrop somebody an Apple Pay Cash payment? So you could just see like, oh, there's somebody standing, you know, right in front of me. I need to send them $10. Pop open, you know, AirDrop and say, you know, here, I'll send $10 to this person. Obviously, you know, you'd still want to be able to like approve that with, you know, Face ID or Touch ID or wherever. But like, I feel like, excuse me, that could be a big benefit in terms of just making it even more frictionless to exchange payments with people without having to base it on iMessage or going to iMessage. Because, again, I understand why they put it in iMessage, but I don't love it. It's not my favorite place for it. Like, I think it seems somewhat cumbersome at times to have it in there, but I understand that it was easy to build that on top of a network that already had the whole sort of identity thing built into it. And then, you know, thinking a little bit when you were talking about your Bedded app not working on the iPad because there's no health access, Apple Pay on the iPad is another one of those places where there's Apple Pay as far as you can buy stuff online with Apple Pay. You can send Apple Pay cash payments, but obviously there's no NFC chip in it. And yeah, I get it. You know, people probably aren't like pulling their iPad out at stores and paying at grocery terminals and the like. But some people don't have iPhones, and some people have iPads. And maybe there are cases where you might want to do that, especially if Apple is going to get back into the iPad mini game that is small enough to carry in a pocketbook or something like that. Maybe you do want to use it for that. Why prevent people, you know, from using Apple Pay if they happen to have an iPad but don't have an iPhone? And I say this mainly because my agent has an iPad but no smartphone and complained about this recently. I thought, I understand why they didn't do it. But on the other hand, maybe they could. And I also am surprised that they haven't built sort of an NFC system for using iPads as payment terminals. Like, they basically left that to third parties, which is fine, but it would be pretty cool if you could just buy an iPad out of the box, set it up, and have it be like a register, essentially. And like, you just download an app and it's like, all right, now I've got like a payment terminal here. Like, seems like it would simplify that and like making you able to receive, kind of combined with that sort of NFC thing and airdropping payments to people. If you go to a farmer's market or something, like, I still do see people around with like Square, you know, dongles or whatever. But it's funny now too with the newer phones, like, that don't have the headphone jack. You know, you see the people with the Square dongle plugged into the headphone to lightning jack, mm-hmm. and you're like, wow, that's a terrible solution. Like, that is just awful. And again, wouldn't it be great if you could just sort of like, you know, walk up to somebody and not need a third party thing and just be like, oh, I'm gonna buy this loaf of bread here for like $4 or $5 or whatever, let me just send it to you. I think that would be interesting and potentially even more disruptive as far as Apple Pay goes. So I like Apple Pay a lot. I do feel like maybe Apple's like, all right, we solved this problem, all good. And now let's move on to making a credit card, which seems like, that's not exactly what I was looking for here. I can understand why you feel like that's a benefit to you, but I'm not sure it's as big a benefit to your users.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's a piece of this that we're not seeing, because you're right, the Wall Street Journal, I think, story, I suspect that comes from financial industry sources and not Apple sources, and so it's got that particular spin on it, and it is the Wall Street Journal. But we'll have to see. Apple Pay Cash, the issue with Apple Pay Cash, of course, is rolling it out elsewhere in the world. Because it has not really rolled out in
slowly.
Yeah, it's very
its way
it's
elsewhere,
very slow, and that's frustrating too. Because there's some of the people that I like to send cash to are in the UK, and I can't.
Right. Even just, you know, Apple Pay in other parts of the world, which is like the contactless standard, is standard, right? Yeah. Like, a lot of payment terminals accept it, but you need to also have that. I don't understand fully the complications behind that in terms of transferring money, right? Because it would be great if I could just walk into a store, you know, when I was down in Mexico, and just like pop my phone over instead of, you know, pulling out my card. In some places, you might be able to do that, but
not
everywhere.
But in Germany, I think you can do it pretty well now. But like, I was in the Netherlands, and they have, you know, they have contactless pay, and they've got all sorts of like great stuff going on, but the Apple Pay is not turned on in the Netherlands. Yeah. And so last summer we were there, and I'm like, oh, I need to go to the machine and take out cash, I guess, because they also didn't accept our credit card type, which was super weird. So, you still run into those. But
when I was down in Mexico in November, I ended up everybody I was with, we all basically got our debit cards skimmed at one ATM.
Wow.
And we like compared notes, because we found out a couple weeks later. I was like, oh, what is this? I got like a fraud alert. My fiance got a note. And then the couple we were traveling with, both of them got a notification, and we even contacted somebody who we had met there, and they had also gotten their credit cards or their debit card stolen. And we're like, it was that one ATM. We know exactly where it was, because we all used it. And it's like, yeah, wouldn't it be great if, like, I've seen the ATMs now where you can use Apple Pay or like contactless to tap your phone. The problem for me is none of my It's all like when I go to Bank of America and try to use it, it's like, oh, you don't have a Bank of America card. I'm like, but I have an ATM card. The ATM card will work. So why can't I use my ATM card with the contactless? Why do I have to still put my card in?
I guess.
And it's like, man, I don't know.
I don't know. I do that. I actually have gone to my Bank of America ATM, which is in the same center as my Whole Foods. And I've done that with my Apple Watch, right? Like I've taken my my ATM card on my Apple Pay and tapped it on the ATM, put in my code and taken money out. It's pretty amazing.
It's cool when it works. I did that at a vending machine when I was somewhere. I was like, I used my watch to pay for
I bought a soda in my hotel last week in LA, an overpriced hotel vending machine soda, but I really needed to drink something for, you know, it was like boop boop Apple Pay. Great. Like, and I've seen parking meters that do that too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when you think about all these places where it's like, oh man, I remember when I used to have to be like, God, do I have enough quarters, right? Like, it's nice to not have to think about that as much.
All right, well, I am going to go congratulate my daughter some more, and I think we're done for now, but thanks to everybody out there for listening and supporting us and all of those things. And you got to experience that live, except delayed because recorded live. And until next time.
Live to tape.
Yes, exactly. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.